Welcome to the Normal Birth Podcast. On today's episode, Lindsay G shares her experience with emergency cesarean and mom guilt. Her story sheds light on the significance of a good birth plan and what it means to birth your baby. On a graphic detail scale of 3, today's episode is a 1, which makes it a good episode for first-time moms and those struggling with mom guilt after a C-section.
I did, yeah. I thought it was very interesting to hear another perspective. Because I think that everybody's story is, while obviously it is all the business of birthing a baby, it's just, there's so many different things that can go wrong, and so many people have different experiences. No two stories are the same, even if the method of birth is the same. We just all have our own stories, which I think is cool.
So what made you want to
I feel like for me in particular, I have a lot of guilt, and maybe even a little bit of shame in the way that I had to give birth to my children. And I feel like I'm probably not the only woman, who feels that way. And it seems like a really, my babies are both healthy and beautiful, and it was great from day one, but so you would think, why any type of negative feelings? So I feel silly even having those feelings. And I know that I can't be the only woman who is repressing this guilt or this shame of how I gave birth. Whenever you feel like you should just be overcome with joy that you have a healthy baby. So I feel like I might have a unique perspective in that respect. So just knowledge is power, and sharing my story, maybe other women will get some healing from that. So
okay. Well, where would you like to start?
I guess I could start with my son. He was born in 2011. He was a quote unquote flood baby. So we conceived the weekend of the Nashville flood. my pregnancy was normal. However, my entire pregnancy, or actually my entire adult life, I had been seeing a nurse practitioner, as a gynecologist, which she can do. I love her. Love, love, love her. She just retired last year, actually. I still was going to her because she's just adorable. But I knew going in that she can perform all functions of a regular gynecologist. However, whenever the time came for me to have children, she can't do any of those functions. She can't do any type of obstetrics, obviously can't deliver babies. So I had to transition to I chose to transition to an NP who was another female for my obstetric checkups. But then whenever I had to actually give birth, I had to transition again to the only OB in the practice, which was a man. So the short of it was, I didn't want to see a man for the duration of my pregnancy. I just thought that it would be more comfortable with a woman. And outside of completely leaving that practice to give birth, that was my only option. So I saw the MP who could do obstetrics, so not my normal lady doctor. And she was great. She was kind, and all of my checkups went great. Then the last month, I had to start going to the doctor would deliver my child, the man. I just had to bite that bullet and see that man and have all the lovely checkups and all. And it was odd, but I will say, like, after having had two children and having so much go on down there, like, I don't care anymore. That's something that you very much care about before you give birth, but something like a switch flipped for me. Like, I'm not as inhibited. I'm not as modest as I was whenever I got pregnant with my son. So anyway, I transitioned to him for the last month and everything went normally. Every checkup, you know, he would tell me if I was dilated or not. I cannot remember if I was dilated in any way, shape, or form before I went into labor. I don't remember any of those details, but I was 5 days overdue. I was working late one night, and I remember a coworker was like, "Lindsay, are we going to see you tomorrow morning?" And I think she could just kind of tell I had been having some pains, but I mean, at that point, you can't tell if it's Braxton yeah. Hicks or actual labor. So I just kind of had a feeling like I need to get everything wrapped up. So I worked super late that night. My husband was actually out of town because he worked in Memphis at the time. And I called him and told him, "Hey, I'm having some pains. They're not coming with any regularity at this point, but it feels different." So I called my mom and let her know that. And she said, "Well, I'm going to come spend the night with you." And by the time we both made it to my house, which was in Columbia, so it was a long commute. By the time we both made it back to my house, my contractions were coming pretty regularly. Maybe like every 5 minutes, 6 minutes or so. And it stayed that way, like all night long. Until like probably 10 or 11, they started getting down to like every 3 minutes. And the whole night I'm texting my husband like, "I think this is it." And he's like, "Well, like, do I need to head that way like now?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think so." So I would text him like an hour later, "Where are you at?" "Well, I hadn't quite left yet." So in the meantime, it starts snow / icing in Nashville, and it starts really snowing / icing in Memphis. So my contractions went down to like 2 minutes or like something crazy. And my mom's like, "We've got to go to the hospital." And I was like, "Okay, but Tim's not here yet. What do we do?" She's like, "I think we just need to go." So, I went and, took a shower. I remember I lost my mucus plug. Super gross. I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, girls. I'm sorry. Lost my mucus plug. And I was like, "Oh, this is definitely it." So took a shower. And in my shower, I had to stop throughout the shower and breathe through contractions. Like, it was getting pretty intense. Had to shave. All the things, because I was like, not gonna do this unshaven. So in the middle of like all of the contractions, like trying to do this with a giant pregnant belly, it was difficult, but I was determined. But my mom and I are loading up the car, and I remember I had this exercise ball because I was determined that I was gonna wait as long as possible to get that epidural. If possible, I was not going to have an epidural, and I was going to have this nice relaxing birth, and I was going to roll around on this exercise ball, and it was going to help me. So my sweet arthritic mama, in all of her rushing around, absolutely freaking out, because quite frankly, I don't think that she thought that she was going to be the one taking me to the hospital. She's trying to like wield this giant exercise ball into her car and among my bag and everything. And the whole while I'm having to like stop and breathe through it. So, and then it's snowing and my mom is trying to drive. And that was hilarious. She kept watching the snowflakes. I remember like, you can't look at snowflakes when you're driving in snow. Cause you'll watch the snowflakes and you'll drive off the side of the road. So I had to keep reminding her, "Look at the road, not the snowflakes." And then all the while I'm trying to breathe through. So anyway, we did make it to the hospital, got checked in, exercise ball stayed in the car for now. I went to triage, was in triage for quite a while. I remember the nurse came in, one of the nurses came into triage and was like, would you like some pain medication? I don't think they can do an epidural at that point, but I communicated that I wanted to hold off on pain medications. And one of the nurses, like, communicated, like, was either saying what she had said to another nurse, or I heard him talking to another one, and she said, oh, I heard that we're going to try to do this one natural. And I was like, oh, that was kind of, I didn't like the way that it was laced. It was kind of, that was kind of saucy. So anyway, made it through triage. They put me in a room. I'm texting my husband the entire time. By this point, like, he's left. This is like 3 or 4 in the morning, but now it's been icing in between Memphis and Nashville, and he's having a hard time. Not that he's having a hard time driving, but other people are absolutely freaking out because it's Tennessee and we don't know how to drive in the ice and snow. So anyway, so he's on the way, but it's going very slowly. The sun comes up and my dad decides he's going to come, and like, I'm just like, oh, shoot me now. I am by myself. My husband is not here. My mom and my dad are watching me labor. And the contractions were getting pretty intense. My husband shows up. He finally makes it.
What time is this?
I feel like y'all were already texting me or, like, reaching out to me. Okay. So, like, maybe after 8.
Okay.
So, it took him a while to get there. Like, 4 or 5 hours, where it should have only taken him like 2.5 to 3. So he finally makes it and is talking about what a treacherous trip it was. And by that point, things were really getting intense. But I wasn't progressing very, very quickly. I think my husband made it before my OB had made his first round. And I remember my OB came in, was like, he checked me, was not pleased with my progress, with how long I had already been laboring. And he was like, well, good morning. How are you? I'm going to break your water now. After he broke my water, things went from like a 4 to an 11. Like, it was intense.
Did he discuss that with you beforehand, that might happen?
Not really. Okay. No. So remember the exercise ball that I wanted, and then me and all of my modesty. So my husband and I, we don't even really, like, tinkle in front of each other. Like, we just don't do that. But after they, broke my water, I found out that you can't actually leave your bed after your water's broken. So I was not able to leave the bed and do any kind of coping strategies. And
that was a hospital policy?
Yeah, okay. Due to the risk of infection. And the nurses that came in weren't really equipped to deal with women who, like, are not helpful, particularly helpful for women who are trying to labor without any type of pain medication, I feel like. And this is on me. Like, after the fact, I realized that I probably should have, if that was something that I was very passionate about, I should have researched. I should have realized that there are doulas, other programs that I could have reached out if that was something that I felt super passionate about. But I felt like in the moment, like, I was very much determined that this was something that I was going to do, but I had no help in this. So, it became pretty clear to me by like 11 o'clock. So my water had been broken for 1 to 2 hours that I could not, I'd met my limit. Every contraction at that point, they were coming like once a minute, I feel like. And it literally feels like, I don't know if you feel this, but it literally feels like you are being ripped apart. Like, I thought, there's no way. I'm dying. I'm literally dying. I have to have some help with this. So my husband knew that I didn't want an epidural. And so I told him, I was like, Tim, I think I'm going to need that epidural. And he's like, okay, so I'm not calling the nurse for you because I know how this goes. if I call the nurse for you, when after we leave this hospital, it's going to be, I was fine without the pain medication, and Tim called the nurse and said I needed the epidural. So he was like, so I have one request. I'm going to ask you to press that nurse's button, and you need to be the one to ask for the epidural. And while, like, thinking back on it, silly, like, we'd been married 6 years, maybe 7 years at this point. Like, he knows me. Like, he's right. I totally, totally would have been like, you called the nurse and said I needed an epidural before I actually needed it. So, anyway, I got the epidural. That in itself was horrible. So, I had always thought there's a point of no return where you can't have, you get so far along where you can't have the epidural. So I was like, am I too far along? I wasn't. Like, I was, I still wasn't dilating great at a great rate. Like, things were going very slowly. Not concerning yet, but still very slowly. But they said, no, you can have an epidural, like, right up until the moment you're ready. Not maybe not quite ready to push, but like they said, the biggest thing is you have to be able to sit still, and that's the part that is hard for a lot of women because they wait too late and they're in too much pain and they can't sit still for the actual procedure.
When those contractions start coming one after another, there's just no
way. Yeah, and I thought, well, I'm gonna die if I don't do this, so I have to. So, like, they came in to do, the anesthesiologist came in to do it. I was fine. I was powering up. Like, I can steel myself. Like, I'm a pretty determined person. Like, I got this. But they made my husband, or didn't make, but they have your husband, like, hold, or your partner, hold on to you hard as they can. Mm-hmm. This is not COVID time, obviously. This was long ago, back in the olden times. But they said, now hold on to her really tightly while we do this because we're doing the epidural and, you know, there's risk of paralyzing.
Yeah.
Whatever. As soon as they started all that, I felt the contraction start. And they ended up doing the epidural right as a contraction was completely rocking my body. How I stayed still in that moment, I have no idea. But thank God they did it. And thank God it worked. Like, I've heard some women say that their epidurals didn't work or didn't work enough. My epidural was lovely and wonderful and everything that I hoped it would be. And I felt in that moment a little like I'd let myself down a little bit. But seeing how calm labor was after that, I felt like, yeah, I made the right decision. I just don't think that I could labor naturally without any pain medication. So after that, they let my parents back in. My dad is still like, my dad does this really annoying thing. He's got a lot of kids. So he's been in the room with many of his daughter, a lot of his daughters while we labor, you know, because it can take a while. And his big thing is he really likes to look at the chart and tell you when you're having a contraction. He thinks it's funny. And I distinctly remember Dad, oh, you're having a contraction now. Just, Dad, just sit down, please. But so it went on, not much progressing. The doctor kept coming in and checking on me. And at like maybe 3:30, Reed, my son's, he started looking a little distressed on the monitors. Like, something is not right. Like, we're not going to let you do this much longer before we, like, make some serious interventions.
And you had the full belly workup at that point with all the monitors.
Yeah, okay. The little thing strapped on. So he started having some distress. The doctor came in one time, and he was like, okay. So he left and he came back in like not long after, like maybe 15 more minutes later. And he was like, okay, we're not doing this. He said, we've got to take that baby. Like, we're going to take him now. Like, I can't let this go on any longer. And I didn't think that it was, he is a very, very good doctor. And I ended up really liking him. I really liked his no-nonsense approach. And I really liked that he didn't make me feel panicked. I could sense that he was serious and I did not question him, but he didn't make me feel panicked. It wasn't until like he walked out the room and 10 to 15 people flooded in that I realized, oh, this may actually be a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And then I started freaking out. The anesthesiologist came, and I already had the epidural, so they make the epidural go up further. Mm-hmm. So they don't want you to feel anything below your chest.
Okay.
I think if I'm remembering correctly. So he had to manipulate the epidural to make it move up or whatever. And then I just remember having like this, I started to shake uncontrollably. Like I've never experienced that before in my life. And I don't know if it was the epidural, but I have a feeling it was probably just my response to the absolute freak out. Like I was having some sort of freak out moment because I was terrified. I'd never had surgery before. Like I'd never had a certain, people had never cut on me before. And you're suddenly being whisked away into an OR. Tim couldn't go with me at that point. Obviously, they send the partners away to be like suited up, whatever. So there was a moment where we were separated and then they move you from one bed to the other. At that point, whenever you're being checked, I don't know if this is like this for everybody. I don't know how normal this is, but whenever I was being checked, it was very much, remember, I'm still pre-childbirth modest. Mm-hmm. They check you like under the blanket, like you're still very covered.
Yeah.
When I got into the OR, it was like, boom. Oh, gown goes up. Like you are literally laying there completely exposed for this entire team to gander upon. I mean, obviously they need to be able to see the area that they're working on.
Did they have a sheet up or anything for you at that point?
I think, yes, you do have a sheet that protects you from seeing. But I mean, I could feel like, because you can't feel, you can feel sensations, and I could feel that I was being disrobed. And I remember the anesthesiologist had an incredibly country accent. And he kept tapping on my shoulder. And he kept saying, is this sharp? Is this sharp? And I had no idea what he was saying. Is this sharp? He needed to know if the sensation that I was feeling on my shoulder was sharp.
Yeah.
Because if it was sharp, then that meant that my epidural was not at the level it needed to be before they started hacking on my body. So yes. I understood that what he was saying to me was very important. But in my mid-panic attack, I couldn't put together what he was saying. So finally worked it out. Thank God my epidural was strong enough. I don't remember a whole lot of the sensations, but I do remember there was an incredible amount of tugging and pushing. I could feel all of the tugging and pushing and pulling. Reed was born, I think his cord, his distress was his cord was wrapped around, I think, his ankle. So, which was still not awesome, but they didn't know where his cord was wrapped. His cord could have been wrapped anywhere, and it could have been bad. So, I think that the doctor definitely made the right call. So he was born. My husband was the first one that held him. I got to see him second. All of the things that they were doing to Reed, like the weighing of him and all that. You've got this giant sheet. You very much want that sheet. You don't want to see your own intestines. That's not an awesome thing to see. So I guess I'm thankful that the sheet was there, but the sheet also blocks you from a lot of the other stuff that's happening. So where they're weighing him and cleaning him and doing all that, my husband can see, I couldn't. So when they finally wrapped him up, my husband brought him to, they kind of like laid him by my head where I could see him. And just overwhelming joy. Like that part of it, was not lost for me. I still felt all of this amazing joy that my son had just arrived. It's a pretty quick process. They stitched me back up. They sent me back to, you go to a recovery room. And I slept. I know I should have been excited about just having given birth, but I was literally awake the entire night before, had a very long labor, had a lot of pain before I got my actual epidural because I labored for a while before it, and I slept. I think I slept in the recovery room maybe something like 3 or 4 hours. It was a long time, like longer than it probably should have been, but they wouldn't send me to a normal room until I woke up, until I was aware and awake and fully like cognizant. So Tim just sat there right beside me and held the baby. It was a point of contention with my parents because my parents knew nothing. They were sent away like as soon as they found out that I had to have a C-section. I guess they had to go to a waiting room because you don't get the L&D room anymore. You're done with that room. So they had heard nothing. I guess they heard that the baby was born. But in recovery, you're only allowed one person back there with you. And Tim was not letting go of Reed. Was not. He was not trading off with my mom or my dad. Like, and he very much stood his ground. Like, no, I'm going to stay here with my wife. And I'm going to stay here with my son. Until we go to a normal room, you're going to have to be okay with that. So the nurses were kind of flustered having to relay this to my mom and dad, yeah, who probably were not the nicest about it. And Tim was also pretty much standing his ground. So the nurses encouraged my parents to go have dinner, have a good dinner out. It was going to be a little while before I made it back to the room. Anyway, here's where it gets blurry. We eventually made it back to the room. My parents were able to see the baby. They were a little miffed that it, you know, he had already been in this world 3 or 4 hours and they hadn't seen him. So, but that part of it went well. Tim did leave. He went home for a night because he also hadn't slept either. So my mom and he traded off and we all got our nice bonding time with Reed. And I was in the hospital for, I think, 4 days with him, and so we all got plenty of time together in the hospital, and I went home from the hospital, and my mom and dad were there to help, so all went just perfectly after that point. I healed beautifully. I remember I came into the office maybe at Reed's 2-week appointment. It was that day of the really bad snowstorm.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like I popped by the office that day. And at that point, I was still sore, like very much sore, but moving about. Like, I don't remember being in a significant amount of pain. In fact, they gave me pain meds, but I wasn't really taking them. But I dropped in all of my just having given birth and up in the middle of the night stupor, waking up with a baby, a newborn baby, I dropped this giant decorative plate on my toe one night and hurt my toe so bad. But I remember being thankful that I had the C-section drugs because it helped me with my toe. I didn't really need it for my C-section. I need it for my dadgum toe. But anyway, so that, I healed beautifully. Breastfeeding was a little bit of a challenge. I was still kind of modest, so the lactation consultant was trying to help me with my modest issue. Like, I would let her come in and help me, but I wouldn't let her, like, get all up in there and help me.
They really want to grab on.
Yeah, like, we just met. Like, buy me a drink first. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, that, we figured it out. We figured it out. Reed, I think, he was tongue-tied. I didn't find that out until later. So I feel like he had trouble latching from the get-go. So he just nursed a really long time. He was not an awesome sleeper up until the time he was 2 years old. He was waking up in the middle of the night. several times. So I didn't know how to nurse in my sleep at that in the early months. I figured that out, and that was life altering. But I mean, that's any new mom. Yeah. I feel like our journey once we got home was normal. It wasn't until like it settled in, like I gave birth and like maybe several months after that, that I started having this, wow, I didn't get to push. I didn't get to push. And like my husband, he was the first one that got to hold the baby. And like, that's not cool. Like, I carried him for 9 months. Like, that should have been me. And so I started thinking, like, why didn't the doctor do this or that differently? If he just would have done XYZ differently, if I just could have been allowed my dadgum exercise ball, if they would have let me out of the bed, I could have labored differently. And maybe that would have impacted the way that I progressed or whatever. So I had a lot of, like, didn't do that as well as I could have. Like, but I still very much maybe pushing blame on other people at that point. But then I got pregnant with my daughter. And they went back and looked at the notes. So that 3 years, they're, no, 2 years. They're exactly 3 years apart. So I got pregnant with her like 2 years after. And I went back in my first appointment, which I'd gone back to my MP for my normal OB, my normal gyno appointments. So my MP who couldn't deliver, couldn't do any obstetrics. So whenever I got pregnant that time, I already knew my doctor, the man, and I felt pretty comfortable with him. So whenever I got pregnant, she said, would you like to just transition directly to the doctor and see him for the duration of your pregnancy? Yeah. Or would you like to see the OB nurse practitioner until you get closer, like you did with your first? And I opted to just go ahead and see him from the get-go. But my very first appointment with her, with my my normal gyno, like where she says, "Oh yes, you are pregnant. You are pregnant." I said, "Can you please just failure to progress?" That was what they labeled Reed's birth. Like it was just failure to progress, and then he went into distress. Can you just check out things down yonder? To see if maybe, like, it's me. And then she checked me and she was like, well, yeah, your bone structure is not great. She said, I can see how maybe that could have been your issue. I had already been through a 9-month pregnancy, given birth, and this is the first I'm hearing that my bone structure may not be conducive to childbirth. Yeah. Wow. Cool. Okay. So then I went to see, I transitioned to the man doctor, and oddly enough, my first appointment with him, I didn't actually get to see him. He practices with his wife, who only does gynecology, but she fills in for him on OB checkups in the event he's delivering a baby or whatever. So my very first OB appointment with him, I actually got to see his wife, and she checked me, and I was like, I asked her to. I said, just so you know, my gynecologist, NP, my normal NP, said that I might not have the bone structure for childbirth. So can you, like, second opinion?
Yeah.
And she checked me out, and she was like, well, let's say, like, you're pelvic bones are a garage door. She said, yours is only going to go up halfway. So she said, if you have a tiny baby, that would be okay. But if your baby is bigger, it's probably not going to happen. She said, I'll never forget. She said, going back to the garage door analogy, she said, yeah, you're more of a Mini Cooper kind of gal. Okay. So that stuck with me.
Well, let me ask you, do you think knowing that going into your first birth, that would have changed anything for you? Or do you think you would
have changed? I would have known, like, this might not happen for me. I definitely wouldn't have been messing with this nonsense of going without the epidural for so long. If I knew that a C-section was likely going to happen, I would have said, give me the drug straight away. Mm-hmm. And I would have been prepared mentally. Because I don't know that the panic attack would have happened or whatever happened in that C-section moment with my first. I feel like I just would have been better emotionally, physically, psychologically prepared had I known. Which was where I was going to be with my daughter, which is great. So like I went in eyes wide open, like this could be a thing that my body can't do. So then the conversation started shifting whenever I did go in for my regular checkups with my man OB, who I still love. I still think he's great. The conversation shifted from, should we try a VBAC? Should I even try that? So I played with that for a little while, went a few months, like, should I try? And he was willing. He said, like, he didn't think that that was completely off the table. He was going to try as long as I wanted to. But then this really awesome thing started happening to me that I do. Like, I have this fear of failure. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to fail.
Yeah.
And I thought, if I set myself up for a VBAC and think this could be a thing and get my hopes up, if my body will perform the way that it should, mm-hmm. and then I end up having a C-section, I'll be crushed. Like, I will be crushed. I think it would be just 10 times worse. So halfway through my pregnancy, I was like, let's just not even talk about this VBAC. Mm-hmm. Let's just schedule a C-section and just be done with it. So the last half of my pregnancy, we went through knowing that, which the great thing is, okay, so I did not know this, but a girlfriend just told me, you don't have to have cervical checks whenever you're, like, what? So, but anyway, for him, for my doctor, we knew that I was going to have a scheduled C-section anyway. So I got to forego all of the cervical checks that you normally would have, but apparently don't need to. Anyway.
It's not required. It can help people know how things are progressing. So
it can help, but, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, yeah. I've heard of people walking around 9 centimeters dilated for days. Yeah.
And you can also dilate.
Yeah. So who knew? Anyway, I'm not going to have any more babies. So, but I will impart that knowledge on all new mamas that I come across. Like, by the way, nobody has to fill up your business.
Even during labor.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Did not know that. So anyway, I didn't have to do the cervical checks. Like, we just skipped all of that. She had an eviction date. Mm-hmm. I felt a little guilty about not allowing her to select, or like her to select her date of birth. So I think this little gift for me, I don't know if any way, shape, or form it was actual labor, but the morning that my husband and I were on our way to the hospital to have her for the scheduled C-section, I started having pains, like, okay. contractions. So it might have been just God's little, like, she's ready. But for me, like, oh, I'm not forcing her to come into the world at a time that she's not ready. Like, this is okay. She's ready. Yeah, it even got so bad, like, to the point where whenever my husband got to the hospital, I had to, like, breathe through a little contraction before we went inside. So it was pretty intense. So she got... they checked me in. Everything went fine. C-section went all as scheduled. The whole process took, you know, once they get you ready to go, like all like down, ready to go. The doctor doesn't come in until the very end.
Yeah.
And his part is like 15 minutes tops. She was born 7:47 in the morning, I think. Like I was like, oh, just in time for work. She was born just so she wouldn't be late for work. And I remember during my C-section, let me back up. With Reed, I had the epidural, of course, because I was already laboring. But with her, I had a spinal block, which is just a single shot that numbs you for just a couple of hours, because that's all they need. That's far preferable, having had both, like the recovery time from both. That spinal block, like it really does. You can start to feel your toes like a lot faster. Like I enjoyed that more, but it is a really giant sharp needle that they do shove up your back. And at that point, with a scheduled C-section, your partner is not allowed in the OR for scheduled C-sections until you're already down, prepped, ready to go. So I had to have this very small nurse holding on to me as they gave me this spinal block shot. And I remember thinking, gosh, I really wish that this was Tim.
Yeah.
But it's fine. It's fine. In the middle of my C-section, the only snafu that we had was I started feeling intensely nauseous. Like I'm going to throw up in the middle of the C-section, which you can't, like I was lying on my back, like I can't throw up. They shot something into my IV and it immediately took any bit of nausea away, which was amazing. Yeah, and then never any problems after that. She was born again. My husband got to be the first to hold her. He's seen parts of my body, my insides that he should not see. I remember him saying that he was peeking around the curtain, and they at one point were like, sir, no, go back to your set. You're going to see something here you don't want to see. But yeah, so she was born, no incident. My doctor said, this was funny, in the middle, he said, you're going to smell something burning right now. And he said, you're going to laugh about this later. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know what he was doing. He was burning some inner part of me. But, yeah, I'm glad he didn't explain to me what he was doing at the time. But, yeah, hers went off without incident. It definitely was better, the recovery. I was well rested. I'd had a good night's sleep the night before. So whenever I went to recovery, I held her immediately. I got some good skin-to-skin. I started breastfeeding. So this was another thing I didn't mention with Reed. I started breastfeeding immediately.
Okay.
And I felt like I know that Reed was tongue-tied, but he still had issues breastfeeding. And I feel like it could have started in that I did not get that time with him for several hours. And on the flip side, her, like, she was an amazing nurser. Like, 10 minutes on each side, she was done. Like, she's a quick, efficient eater. Just, she's always just been, she slept perfectly. Just the dream. And so we got breastfeeding down, she and I, so much faster than Reed and I did. And a lot of that could just be that I was more experienced, too. But, yeah, so everything with her went as scheduled. But after she was born, I just still am wrestling with all these thoughts that my body can't do what other women's bodies can do. Had it been, you know, olden times, like 1800s, whatever, like I would have probably died in childbirth. So I should be grateful for modern medicine. There's a part of me that's like, my body is flawed. Like my woman parts are not made to give birth. So that's been a lot of shame, and feelings of failure that I've carried, especially whenever I hear about women who have just these flawless births, and I get to hear their awesome stories of how they got to push, or how long they pushed. Some women push for a really long time. and that sounds awful, but kind of like that would be kind of cool to experience pushing. Some women talk about how they labored for a really long time and they dilate and they are able to push the baby out and they're able to be the first one to hold the baby. Some women get to cut the cords. Like all these really cool things that like bonding moments that happen with their babies. I didn't get to do any of that. But then I feel like it's me. Like I failed. I failed my babies. I failed as a woman. So like I said before, like, I feel like I've had to repress a lot of that. Cause at the end of the day, people tell you like, you have a healthy baby. That's the goal. You had a healthy baby. I've heard that so many times. You have a healthy baby. Why? That is your only goal. And while that's true, it's still hard because I don't have a birth story. I feel like my births were surgical procedures. They weren't really births. So I didn't get to see either one of my children come out of me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's been something that I have been wrestling with. And still, quite frankly, to this day, like, I mean, it's silly. My kids are 10 and 7, but, like, it still stings a little bit whenever I hear of women having these perfectly flawless births. So I feel like I don't know what to say to another C-section mama to make her feel better.
Yeah.
Except for offering that. You're not the only one. Like,
yeah.
if other women are feeling this way, like, maybe this is something that women feel, who can't give birth vaginally. The pain has softened a bit. My kids are, I'm very much in the throes of motherhood and all of that wonderful thing, all of the wonderful things that come along with that, and I try to impart wisdom to moms as I am called upon, but there's still like this little twinge of are you really a full-fledged mom? Like, did you really become a mom? Like, I don't know, it's ridiculous to feel that way, but one of my favorite books is The Red Tent. And I don't know, like, if any of your listeners have heard that, but it's a phenomenal book. Phenomenal book. But there's all these beautiful stories of women giving birth in the red tent. And it's very much an empowerment moment to squeeze your baby out of your body and to feel that life force. And it's all completely lost on me. So, anyway, that's my long story.
Thank you so much for sharing that with me.
Yeah.
Do you think, I know a big thing that's really come out more recently since you've had your babies is the importance of mental health and postpartum care. Do you think if that were offered to you at the time, you would have looked into it? Or have you since then?
I don't know. Like I said, the feelings didn't start creeping in until that confirmation after I had my daughter that my body was flawed. So I was very much into motherhood. With Reed, I'd still convinced myself that there was trauma and his birth could have gone differently. Mm-hmm. And then after Scarlett was born, I don't know. It's hard to say if I could have put my finger on any of the feelings that I was having as a mental health issue where I probably would have benefited from talking to someone. Perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe if there was like someone who would have stopped by my room and said, "Hey, I heard you're a C-section mama and I just wanted to let you know that you still succeeded." You still did an awesome job. Like, I feel like that champ being a champion for women who've gone through C-sections would have been helpful in that moment. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe that would have been helpful.
Well, I mean, it could be that. You may have preferred just to have someone commiserate with you to sit down and understand.
Yeah. Like some sort of a C-section support group. There's probably all sorts of things like that. But, like, I'm very much, like, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. We don't want to admit that we have a problem. We're going to repress all these feelings. But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that probably would have been helpful just to be able to talk with other moms about the process of going through a C-section, the feelings that you might have because of it. So, yeah, that would have probably been, maybe not speaking with, like, a therapist per se, but, like, some sort of support group or a group of moms. That probably would have helped a lot. So I feel like as I hear about moms who have undergone emergency C-sections or whatever, I'm trying to be more aware now as I settle with these feelings that I probably should check in with them to let them know, like, hey, I know how you're feeling right now, and I'm here if you need to process any of that. So I'm trying to be more aware of that, so to be helpful to other moms.
That's wonderful. So looking back on all of it, what would you say would be your top thing that you would want other moms to take away from this?
Your goal is a healthy baby. Oh my gosh, nobody wants to hear that. I mean, I've heard other women say it before, but like birth is just as much for the mom as it is for the baby. Like it's a shared experience between the two of you. So like if you have thoughts and feelings about how your birth went, it's okay. Like, this is something that your body went through. Like, no matter how your body went through it, it's still very much something that you experienced. So while a lot of people put focus on the baby, it's still about you too. So you're okay to have thoughts and feelings and emotions and all of those things of how you would have liked for your birth to have gone, or things that you loved about your birth. Like, if you had a really amazing birth experience, you're allowed to enjoy that. Like, if that was an enjoyable thing, that's awesome. Celebrate that. So just, yeah, your birth is, it's your story too.
Yeah.
And you're okay to feel whatever way you feel. And share your story, because there may be women who went through something similar who haven't been able to verbalize it or put their finger on why they feel the way they do. So that's it. That's all.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I've never really start to finish laid it out. I think I heard your other participants say that, like, I've never told the birth stories start to finish, so and processed, like, verbally processed that. So it's been fun and a good therapeutic thing for me to do. So thank you, and thank you for this project.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Normal Birth Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or are interested in being on the show, please send me an email to normalbirthpod@gmail.com.